Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettiner, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society, to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Catherine Zocca, who is the co-owner of Canio's Bookstore, which is on the brink of extinction. And the reason for that is, I'm told, now she's shaking her head. No, that sounds like good news. We'll get to that. Thumbs up. That's wonderful. We can talk about what's going on and how we had heard was that you had lost the lease, or not lost it, but they raised the price or something, and you were looking for a new place. That's where I left off. What's the new news?
Well, first of all, thank you, Dan, for having me on representing Canio's Books. We appreciate that. And the news, the update for those out there listening is that, you know, Canio's indeed did lose the lease at 290 Main Street, where we've been the southern gateway to Sag Harbor for 44 years. But the bookstore itself, while we don't, temporarily, we do not have a brick and mortar place, we are committed to looking for another location. And we have been looking for a location really for the last year to try to find a place in or near Sag Harbor. So that continues. The owner of the building that we were in basically did not renew the lease. It was not a negotiation issue. It was her desire to be able to renovate the space. So we put our collection, our wonderful collection of books and other memorabilia in storage. And the wonderful sign is in storage, and the goal is to reopen the bookstore at another location. But meanwhile, as you probably know, Dan, we launched a not-for-profit, Canio's Cultural Cafe, in 2009. So we have an educational not-for-profit that will continue doing programming in the area. For instance, the Moby Dick Marathon, we will have that again in June of 2025. And we will do a number of other programs at locations that we have partnered with over the years. So,
I think there are a lot of people that are unfamiliar with Canio's who might be watching this. I would probably say that Canio's Bookstore is probably as legendary to the readers as Stephen Talkhouse, the music site in Amagansett, is to live music. And it's a treasure for this community to have both of these places. And so that's why I wanted to talk to you about how things might proceed. If you don't have a physical space, how would you do the reading? Where would it be? Moby Dick?
Well, you know, actually, over the last decade or longer, when we do the Moby Dick Marathon, we have moved it all around the village of Sag Harbor. We have five or six other host locations that we've partnered with, and that includes the Whaling Museum, that includes the Old Whalers Church, which we love to do the sermon portion of Moby Dick at that location, which is fantastic. The church, the new art church in Sag Harbor. We've also been at Eastville Community Historical Society, at the library. So all these locations, plus many others in the area, welcome us to do programming going forward. We've also have done a lot of programming at the Christ Episcopal Church in Sag Harbor. So we go beyond the borders of the bookstore, and we have been doing that, and we will continue to.
So just so people know, the book, Moby Dick, which has a chapter about Sag Harbor in it, is read in relay form by authors and writers in the community over, what is it, 6 days?
Well, we do it over 3 days, and people sign up in advance. They read a 10-minute section. We have a program where their name is printed in it. So it's a great community event. You know, people from 14 to 84 have read in the in it, well-known and unknowns, and people who haven't ever read the book before. You know, the idea is to really encourage people to read a book that, you know, while it is one of the treasures of American literature, is daunting to a lot of people out there. And so the marathon, hearing the language read out loud, has inspired a lot of people to actually, you know, forge their way through the book and complete it. It's a miraculous journey. And I think you've been on it a couple of times, so.
Yes. What are some of the other things that the cafe nonprofit does beside Moby Dick?
So it's an educational nonprofit. So both myself and Marianne are teachers. I'm actually a photographer and I teach photography. Marianne is a writer. She teaches writing workshops as part of the Cultural Cafe. In addition to that, we have other programming, readings of different writers or forums about different literary subject or issues that are of a great interest to the community. We do a lot of events along the line of the environment and natural resources. So that's just one, that's just a couple of samples of what we have done and will continue to do going forward.
What would they say when in your publicity for these events? How would they would you have an author? What exactly is the arrangement that happens when you do such an event? Give me an example, like Moby Dick.
Well, we do, you know, the events range from a simple hour-long event in either the store or now at another location to something like the Moby Dick Marathon, which is probably the more complicated or the most complicated event that we do, since it is over, we range over the entire village over a 3-day period. But so some examples would be, we would have an author come in and do a reading from their book, followed by a Q&A. That's a very simple, basic thing. We've had authors ranging from people who live in the area and have published their own book to the likes of Colson Whitehead, who is, you know, an internationally renowned Pulitzer Prize winner over, 2 years in a row, someone who has a presence in Sag Harbor. So we're always delighted to be able to host Colson when he gives a talk. In addition to that, we also celebrate International Women's Day, where people come into the store and we have like a brown bag lunch and then just have a discussion about issues involving, you know, women in our area or nationally or internationally. So those are just a couple examples of the kinds of events that we offer. Is that what you're looking for?
That's what I wanted to know. But a lot of them are taking place in the store, the physical store. So now you'd have them in some of the other locations. Is that how that would work out?
Yeah. And actually mentioning Colson, I have to say the last two events that we did with Colson Whitehead were both off campus, so to speak. We had him speak, I guess, 2 or 3 years ago at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation Meeting House. Spilled out crowd, well over 200 people. And then just more recently, he spoke, we had him speak at the Christ Episcopal Church. So while obviously the bookstore is beloved in terms of the actual physical space itself, you know, we recognize that that space, especially post-pandemic, didn't give enough elbow room for some of the people that we wanted to feature and some of the events we wanted to do. And so therefore, we have been hosting events off-site for some time.
Well, would you say you can get along just fine without a physical bookstore and keep your books in storage, or is that still a goal? Sounds like you almost resigned to not being able to find something. How long have you been looking for it?
Oh, we're not at all resigned to not find. Just to clarify, I'm very enthusiastic about the fact that, number one, Sag Harbor is a community, and it's a community of different organizations that come together and support each other. In fact, there used to be, it's in hiatus right now, but an organization called the Sag Harbor Cultural District, we would meet monthly, many of the non-for-profits in Sag Harbor, to talk about programming. And so that really strengthened the bonds of all the organizations, and we started having a lot of cross-disciplinary engagement on activities. So that we will be continuing doing. But there is nothing like the alchemy of coming into a bookstore and talking to a customer about the kind of books that they love and are really interested in, and being able to make a recommendation of a title that they might not have known about. So unquestionably, for the audience listening out there, I want everyone to realize that we are absolutely committed to looking for a new space, and we have been looking for a new space for almost a year at this point. We've had a couple of options that came very close, but due to zoning and renovation requirements, have not actually been realized yet. So while we can continue to do programming with our partner locations, you know, the goal is to actually have a place to land. Like I said, we have our collection in storage right now, so we're actively taking good care of that as we look for another place to be.
Has the government, the Sag Harbor government, been helpful or friendly, or are they giving you a hard time? I can't imagine they would give you a hard time.
Not at all. The village of Sag Harbor is, you know, likes Kaneos, would like Kaneos to continue in Sag Harbor. And so where there would be an opportunity for them to be able to help us, they will be there to help us.
Talk about how it really came about. I remember what it was like when there was another business in that location there on Main Street opposite the deli. And because I've been around so long. And then I remember meeting Canio Pavia, who founded the bookstore, who was, I believe, a teacher, but he was quite in the city. I'm not sure exactly how it all came about. Maybe you could tell us about that.
Sure. I guess now, do you remember it being an electronics store? Because it was an electronics store, and then it was a Goodwill store, right? Which, do you remember both? Or
I can't remember which one it was. I just, you know, it was one of those I was passing by. I used to sell the advertising for the paper in all the stores. And that particular location, I don't think I was ever in to sell. It didn't seem logical to me. But I remember him coming in. He was a wonderful man.
Yeah. I ask about the electronics store because a lot of the young guys who grew up in Sag Harbor used to come into the electronics store beforehand. And then when we took over the store in 99, they would often come in and say, oh, I remember we used to have the vacuum tubes for the TVs back there, and we would drink beer in the back. Anyway, but yeah, in 1980, Kania Pavone, who was a teacher in Mid-Island, I believe in Babylon at the time, was on jury duty. And he was brought a book along to read while he was at jury duty, written by Joe Pintaro. And Joe Pintaro was a Sag Harbor writer, and the book that he was reading was set in Sag Harbor. So Kaneo decided, after jury duty was over, to drive out to Sag Harbor, where he saw a for rent sign in the window of 290 Main Street. And so he had always, you know, been loved books, had been occasionally bringing used books into the city to peddle, I guess, on Fourth Avenue near the Strand, and thought, oh, wow, it'd be great to have a bookstore there. So he went away for a little while and said, well, if it's still for rent in a couple of months, maybe I'll go in and I'll rent it. And so that's how the business began. And so really, for almost the first decade, I think he was continuing to teach. So the store was only open on the weekends, during the year. And and so he then, you know, in 99, after being there full time for a while, decided he wanted to retire. And that's when Marianne and I took over the business.
But it's what is the there's a difference between a bookstore and Kaneo's bookstore? I mean, you can go into any bookstore today and you will know right away that you're in a different place. It's it's so special in there. And I wondered how did he or you come upon the idea of making it what it is? Was books everywhere in the store? You have to, it's a lot of them old ones, used ones, but quite a collection.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for, you know, having the vision to perceive that. I think, first of all, it's a collaborative effort between, you know, Canio early on and then Marianne and myself. And, you know, the idea is that the inventory of the books grew out of our own passions that we have for the different types of literature that are out there, and also what our customers like. And so we tried to develop both a new and used inventory that would appeal to people coming, you know, who either live in the community or visit the community as a resort community. And one of the best compliments we receive, and we hear it often, is that when people walk in the door, they say, ah, a real bookstore. So, you know, it's the books are forward in the store. I mean, we do have some local crafts on offer as well, but really the goal is to offer people books that they're not necessarily going to get, you know, at your regular sort of cookie cutter store that's out there. And nothing against those kinds of stores, but I think that Canio's and like Shakespeare and Company and some of the stores in the city, they have their own unique sort of footprint, and that's based on what the owners bring to the, you know, to the space. I mean, part of the reason Marianne and I took over the business was because we really wanted to have a community gathering space. It was really important for us. We have a gallery. I mean, I'm a visual artist. We have a gallery in the space, so we, you know, highlight the artwork of the people who live in the area. And we wanted to be people to be able to come to have discussions about, you know, topics that are on people's minds. And so that's a lot of what went into guiding how we would, you know, conduct the business over time.
Are you born and raised out here, or in Sagar, on the island, or what's your history?
I'm not a Long Islander or New Yorker. I was born and raised in Maryland, the great state of Maryland.
The Eastern Shore?
You know, really, no, just in Montgomery County, outside of D.C. But I've been in New York, you know, more than half my life. So at this point, I almost feel like I'm a New Yorker.
Do you go back and forth to the city still, or are you primarily out here?
I'm primarily out here. You know, I started coming out in the early mid 80s, and, you know, I have a photographic series called Vanishing Landscapes, and I documented a lot of the farmlands in the area, you know, in the 80s and 90s. So that was a big part of the attraction to the area for me, the rich beauty of the farming landscape, which is now, you know, for those of you listening who haven't been out here for the last, or have only been out here, let's say, the last decade or two, it might seem surprising to hear that we had such rich farmland out here. But Dan, you know that, you know, Scuttle Hole Road used to be farms from one end to the other, and Sagaponack.
Hedges Lane in Sagaponack was named that for an original settler around 1645, around there. And today it's known as Hedges Lane because it's bordered all the way from one end to the other by hedges. And it's just a tremendous change. I had an experience on that road I'd like to mention. I used to commute from East Hampton to my office at that time in Bridgehampton by motor scooter. I had brought down from Cambridge, where I was in college. And if you were at one end of it, which is about 2 or 3 miles long, I think maybe 2 miles, you could see all the way to the other end, as well as the farmland on both sides, and also the mist from the sea when it was rough. Anyway, I would start down that, and this dog had discovered my routine. And he was way down at the other, he lived way down at the other end of Hedges Lane. And as I would, he could hear this strange sound of this particular vehicle, which was unusual here. It was a Lambretta motor scooter. And I'd be buzzing along, and sure enough, he come out to the middle of the road and sit on the white line, stare at me, a mile off, waiting to see if he couldn't catch me as I zipped by. And of course, he never could. But it's a memory that I'll never forget. And there's just so much that's changed here. By the way, did you know Priscilla Bowden? Because she felt the same way about it as a painter. Some of her scenes that she did, I think she's that are no longer around. I have a painting she did of where the free life, the balloon took off, which is no longer in any case, did you know Canio before he opened the bookstore?
Oh, no, not before he opened the bookstore, no. I met him during the course of being at the bookstore, but I wasn't here in 1980 when he first opened the store, so I did not know him.
I was just wondering what motivated him or put that idea that you followed along into. How did that, do you know how that came about, or how did it come about for you? What attracted you to want to make this your life's work as he did?
Well, as I said before, I mean, Marianne and I had talked about having like a community gathering space, you know, a place where you could have art, where you could have readings and the like. And that kind of dovetailed with Canio deciding that he really wanted to retire. And so that was really the impetus behind us, you know, taking over the bookstore. And 1999 Sag Harbor was a lot different than Sag Harbor 2024. So there was a much more of a sense of the arts community at that time than maybe there is today, because Sag Harbor has gone from, you know, what Wilfred Sheed called the Unhampton to being kind of like the It Hampton now. And for those of you who might not be familiar with Wilfred Sheed, he was a writer who lived in Sag Harbor. His wife, Miriam Ungerer, was the great, you know, food cookbook writer as well. And they were part of Sag Harbor's literary constellation at that point in time. And so the village has really kind of shifted from then to where it is now, more of the It Hampton, so to speak.
Well, I could discuss that with you for a long time. I remember when it was all broken down and there were just drunks on the street and the factories and the noon whistle, and it was a whole industrial area. But I think everything changes over time and Sag Harbor is, but some things deserve to not change. And my opinion is that Canio's is one of them. And I'm hoping that you can find another location nearby, somewhere in Sag Harbor, or even become part of some public institution that could have you as a bookstore within it. For example, the church or the movie theater. I mean, right when you said so much, there's so much cultural activity now in Sag Harbor. It's amazing. And proud to be someone who enjoys it, and I'm sure you are too. Yeah. I want to thank you for being on the podcast. We're running to the end of it. And I, if anybody out there wants to get involved with finding Canio's physical location for its collection, just stop in. When this is over, when is that?
Well, the lease is already over, so they can't stop in, but they can contact us at our on our website or via email or via our phone number. They can call us. And I just would also like to say, if they want to support us, we do sell online on bookshop.org. And bookshop.org is a nonprofit, a competitor to Amazon that supports independent bookstores around the country. So if they just go to bookshop.org and select Canio's books, we'll get credit for that. But we are casting a wide net. We have looked very creatively at different ways that we can have a presence, and any suggestions we would welcome. And we thank you for this opportunity, Dan, today.
Well, thanks for being on the podcast. Talk to you soon.
Okay. See you in the harbor.